Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
We all consult so many people these days. Nobody makes a decision in a vacuum. So you have to, as a highly paid sales professional, understand who their influences are. Are they looking at Google reviews? Are they talking with their friends and family, their spouse? Is their manager or executive above them? Are there influencers or end users below them in the organization? And that's where today's professional salespeople really bring value, is understanding that whole dynamic of the pain and the solution and the budget and the decision-making authority, and really helping figure out how we match all these complicated moving parts to an associated solution in the simplest and easiest way possible for you and the person buying.
Hi there, innovator. It's really great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you enjoyed my recent conversations with Chris Tan of Chris Media and with Kate Adams of Drift. Today, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Mike Montague. He's the VP of Online Learning at Sandler Training. Mike and I connected through Seth Godin's marketing community, and I'm really looking forward to this chat today. He's also host of the How to Succeed podcast and co-author of the book LinkedIn, The Sandler Way. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's My Business InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. Now, the first step in that is to get real clarity about who your ideal client is. And to help you do that and help you build a strong and enduring relationship with them, take a look at our Marketing Master mini class. It's just two modules, and in less than 30 minutes, you get to build a really clear picture of your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It is completely free and it's accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Mike talked to me about the three biggest limiting beliefs about sales and how to overcome them. He described the importance of qualifying hard first to determine if the person you're speaking with is indeed your ideal client. And he explained how closing the sale is all about the relationship you've built from the beginning and the information you've provided. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Mike Montague. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Lenexa, Kansas in the USA, Mike Montague. Mike is a public speaker, he's a writer, and he's the VP of Online Learning at Sandler Training. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Mike. It's a privilege to have you here as a guest.
Yeah, great to be a guest. I host a podcast as well, so it's fun to be on the other side of this one.
Yeah. Mike, you and I connected through the ForwardLink community of Seth Godin. So big shout out to all our friends in that community.
Absolutely. I've been following Seth for a long time, and it was fun to join that alumni community after going through his online courses.
Mm. And he's just launched his storytelling course with Bernadette Jiva this morning. So I've jumped on that. Fun.
I passed this time. I got to get back to work. I was learning this summer, yeah. And now school's back, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I'm doing some work on my own storytelling and writing, so I thought that was timely. Now, Mike, you also host, as you mentioned, your own podcast, the How to Succeed podcast, where you interview people from all walks of life, business, and recently some sports personalities, people that have been, you know, gold medalists at Olympic Games and have gone through that journey and explored how they get to their success. So that's really interesting. You also have co-authored the book LinkedIn, The Sandler Way, and you're Sandler's national LinkedIn sales expert for social selling. So I'm really looking forward to digging more into primarily the aspects of selling with you today, although we might get onto podcasting as well. Now, before we get started on that, have you always been in sales?
No, but my family has. So I come from a long line of salesmen and all very successful at it and really enjoy it. My dad became a Sandler trainer when I was a junior in high school. So I took my first sales training class from him when I was in high school before I had anything to sell. But I loved the communication theories that they taught. I loved the goal setting stuff that they taught, and then how to build up a person. We know in sales training that one of the hardest jobs about sales is dealing with all of the no's and the rejection. Yeah, yeah. And as a young single man myself, dealing with rejection was something that hit home for me, and I fell in love with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so when did you follow your father's footsteps, so to speak, and go into the Sandler Training Academy?
Yeah, it's sort of a three-part story, but if you follow all the threads of my career, they actually make sense. So I've always kind of been gifted with computers and designed websites in high school and stuff as well. But I didn't want to be a nerd, and I didn't want to be a pushy salesperson. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be on the radio.
Yeah.
So after college, I got into radio. I had my own show on the Top 40 station here in Kansas City, and did that throughout my 20s, DJing and on the bars and clubs and weddings and on the radio, and had a whole bunch of fun. And that got me into marketing. So I eventually moved to build websites for an advertising agency. And then after about 10 years, moved to work for my dad as a full-time Sandler trainer. So I did that for 5 years. Then I brought them all together. So I host the podcast for Sandler with my radio background. I build the online courses and websites for Sandler with my web design background, and get to teach the sales that I've studied with my father for the last 20 years.
Mm, that's fascinating. So it's, yeah, interesting journey, because you managed to marry all the things that you you kind of learned on that journey, and also stayed cool throughout the whole thing.
It's career tip number one for people listening to the podcast today is you can look up on, you know, Glassdoor or something and find out what a DJ makes or what a web designer makes or what a sales trainer makes. But you can't look up DJ, web designer, sales trainer. That job doesn't exist. I think I have the only one. And yeah, it's been very lucrative, but also valuable to have skill sets in many different areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, that touches on something that we will get to later on in the podcast, obviously, the differentiation thing. But going down the track of sales, I mean, for a lot of entrepreneurs, sales is kind of the thing that they hate the most, and yet it's so important, right? They have to do it, but it seems to be something that goes against the grain for them. Now, I don't know what that is. I mean, I would probably put myself into that category in some regards, and I've got thoughts around, you know, introverts, because I am actually an introvert, believe it or not, that, you know, we go inside and tell ourselves that there's something wrong with going out and selling. And yet, on the other hand, if you've got something of value to the person you're speaking to, then you should be making sure they know about it and give them the opportunity to actually take advantage of that. So what do you think are some of the big limiting beliefs that people have around sales?
I think there are three huge things that we deal with at Sandler all of the time. Let's start with some of the easy ones first, then you can pick which one you think is most interesting or interesting for your audience. The first one is that a lot of people have this false belief that if you build it, they will come, right? If I just make my product great enough or if I just get a big enough audience that people will call up and buy from me and I won't ever have to be in sales. And that may be true some of the time for some outliers. It is possible to run a business that way, but the scaling, growable, really profitable, successful small businesses usually have something to do with sales. They have some hand-to-hand combat. There's a personal conversation. Or even if you're just looking to grow your business faster, why not use sales and marketing and product to do all three at the same time and really grow something fast? I think that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that sales is a weird profession where if you do it right, you don't see it. The salespeople you recognize and the salespeople we all don't want to be are the battleships. They're the huge, you know, personalities and pushy salespeople. We picture that guy in the polyester vest that's slinging business cards and fast talking, and nobody wants to be that guy. But the most professional and most successful salespeople are not that guy. So at Sandler Training, we don't train you to be used car salesmen necessarily. We train you to be professional communicators that ask good questions, that listen, that are highly paid consultants that help people get to the right answers. And when that happens, you don't even associate that person with the profession of selling. You just go, oh, Jürgen's a great guy. I love working with him. You don't say, wow, he really sold me on that because you were listening and asking questions. We find that successful salespeople spend more time listening than they do talking, and they get paid more for the information that they gather than the information that they give or present to people. The third thing here is that people just generally have the wrong perception about what the sales function is. Your job in sales is not to convince people to buy. It's to qualify prospects for need and fit, and whether they have the money and the decision-making ability to buy your product and whether that's the right thing that they should do or not. So I think of it more like a doctor, where if you come in with a broken arm and I sell casts to set that bone for you, then it's probably a pretty good fit and it would be in your best interest to work with me. If, however, you have a broken arm and I'm a podiatrist, I only work on feet, then that's not for you. I can't talk you into buying a boot for your foot if you don't have foot pain. So there's no reason for me to be pushy, to try and convince you or manipulate you into buying a brace for your foot if that's not the problem that you have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I guess one of the things you said in your second point around providing information and asking really good questions and understanding, getting to an understanding of what the customer really does need, you know, is his arm broken or does he have a foot problem? To me, the next step of that is then the ability to actually connect the dots and identify what would be the best solution. And I like the other thing you mentioned there in terms of, well, I've got a plaster cast for your arm, but actually you've got a foot problem. So there's this podiatrist that's in the next office. You're better off going to see him. So I see that as part of the sales function as well, if you like. And then you become that trusted advisor, right?
Yeah, and there's so many myths and misconceptions around this. The problem is the first part. Also, a lot of people just don't like talking about money. And if you don't have money to buy from me, there's nothing I can do to talk you into, you know, borrowing money or having more money to solve this problem. The same thing also happens around decision-making capabilities. We all consult so many people these days. Nobody makes a decision in a vacuum. So you have to, as a highly paid sales professional, understand who their influences are. Are they looking at Google reviews? Are they talking with their friends and family, their spouse? Is there a manager or executive above them? Are there influencers or end users below them in the organization? And that's where today's professional salespeople really bring value, is understanding that whole dynamic of the pain and the solution and the budget and the decision-making authority, and really helping figure out how we match all these complicated moving parts to an associated solution in the simplest and easiest way possible for you and the person buying.
Yeah, that's That's really fascinating stuff, and it comes back to what where I often start with, marketing strategy, and also, I've been doing a fair bit of work this week on launching new podcasts for clients and figuring out, okay, well, let's find out who the listener is, because you're talking to a listener. Let's find out who that is, so that what are they likely to be wanting to hear from you, and it all comes back to understanding, what are the needs of that person, what drives them, who influences them, and what annoys them and frustrates them, and how can you help them deal with those frustrations and annoyances and needs and wants and so on.
Absolutely. We have a great analogy that I'd like to share with you that we use at Sandler all the time for prospecting. We call it the gumball analogy. So just like you said, you have to identify who your ideal client is. We'll call them the green gumball. If this is the person that is perfect fit for you, I love this line, selling something to somebody who needs it, who has the money and can make a decision is not cheating. That's the way sales should be. So if we're looking for those green gumballs and we go out into this world of other gumballs, if we run into a red gumball, it's not worth our time to try and talk them into being green. Mm. Or if we run into a white gumball, I don't even know what flavor that is. Why do they exist? We toss those aside and we ignore them, and we spend our effort solely looking for those green gumballs. And if you're doing anything other than that, you're wasting time. You're going on a scavenger hunt without having the items on your list. You never know when you're going to find the right person. So job number one is identifying all those characteristics of those green gumballs, and then stop wasting time with the whites and the reds and the blues and the purples, and just spend your time looking for those, more of those green gumballs.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really great analogy. One of the things that I find difficult personally, and I suspect that I'm not alone in this, is you've gotten clear about who the ideal client is. You're providing them lots of really valuable information that addresses their needs, that addresses their issues and their wants. You've started to build a relationship, and you get to the point where, there's an engagement and you make an offer. It's at that point where, for me, it becomes a bit of a struggle, right? Mm-hmm. So how do I close that person then? How do I get from that point? I know they're really interested. I know that what I've got's going to help them, because I understand that, all their needs and frustrations and the things that the gaps in their business are exactly what I can help them fill and address. But how do I get to that next step of the closing part?
Yeah, you're nailing all my hot button issues today. So either you've been listening to too many podcasts, or you've been in sales for a while. If you've tried to run your own business for a while, you've run into all of these things. So this is a great one. We have a rule at Sandler that if you're going to fight up front. The problem that most people have is they wait until the end to talk about money, or they wait until the end to find out that there are decision makers or there's competitors involved, or what they said they wanted really wasn't what they actually wanted. So it sounds like a cop-out to your question, Jurgen, but if you've gotten to the end and you have a problem, you messed up way earlier in the process. Yeah. And that's part of that qualification process. So most salespeople do this wrong. If you think about the traditional model of selling, it is quickly do a needs analysis. Usually that means for bad salespeople, like, can the person fog a mirror? Are they alive and will they listen to your pitch? But then they go into the pitch first and they try and close second, which means they have to overcome stalls and objections and all the things that people didn't like about the presentation in order to get past that close. At Sandler, we like to flip that model on its head and do it backwards. So we want to qualify hard first, then close, and then present one really good solution that solves all their problems. So this is really complicated. You can ask me any follow-up questions you want. But basically, most salespeople spend way too much time guessing what the prospect wants and guessing what the prospect thinks is important, instead of asking all of those questions up front and then presenting the right answer. So we can use a hypothetical here. Let's say that we'll use yours. You're buying a podcast hosting and production service. We can ask them questions up front about what they're looking for. Like, how many episodes do you want? Or do you love booking guests? Do you love editing episodes? You know, which part of this process are you looking to outsource? And then at the end, we can say, hey, we do all those things. Or we can run down all of the lists of all the services that you have, Jürgen, and ask which ones they like or don't like, in which case we're going to guess wrong. So think about instead like a doctor's office. He doesn't say, hey, here's all the great drugs and prescriptions we can prescribe you. Which ones would you like? That puts the decision-making in the hands of the amateur, and somebody's going to pick something that maybe sounds fun, but doesn't solve their cough or cold.
Yeah.
Right? So instead, we have to do like a doctor, ask all these questions, and then prescribe one right solution at the end that they don't have an objection to. That they say, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I was looking for. Hmm. And then the hardest close we ever have to use is, what would you like to do next? If we have something that solves your problem within your budget and is super easy for you to make a decision on, what are the options left? Really, it's just to move forward.
Okay. And you mentioned pricing, that most people bring pricing up at the end, and also the question of, are there other decision makers involved that need to know the information that we've just talked about? At what point do you address those two things?
Absolutely before you present or send over any kind of proposal, quote, people listening to this podcast, I don't know what type of business you have. So some people do formal presentations in front of groups. Some people just shoot over a quote or a confirmation of agreement. You might have any kind of proposal process there. But certainly before you do all of that, you want to find out the pain, budget, and decision stuff. So most people wait on the price because we use some sort of line like, I don't know how much it's going to cost because I don't know what you need yet, and I need to do my needs analysis before I give you an accurate quote. Jürgen, you need to know how many podcasts they're doing, you know, what's all involved, how much editing there's going to be, and all that stuff before you just say, hey, it's $100. Well, we don't know yet. Which is fair, but before we send over the proposal, we need to know. What we don't want to do is ask you for $100,000 and you were expecting $50,000, because that's going to blow you out of the water, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So this is difficult, and there's a lot of nuance to it. But in short, the answer to all of these would be, ask the prospect what they're expecting first before you give the answer. The person who's talking is losing in this scenario. So if you're the salesperson, you're saying, look how great I am and look how much value you get for this price and here's what it costs, you're losing because you're the going first and you're guessing. If instead you ask, hey, what are you trying to accomplish? How much did you set aside for this? Is this something you have a budget for, or what were you expecting? I don't need to know every dollar. I promise I'm not going to use every dollar. If you tell me you got $100,000, I'm not going to say, oh, all of a sudden it's $99,999. I'm going to tell you appropriately, but what I don't want to do is surprise you and blow you out of the water. So let's just have an open and honest discussion with the other side to figure out if there's a fit or not. And if I am $100,000, you only have $50,000, I'm not going to be mad. But I'm also not going to cut my price down to $50,000 to do the work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can save time and have the conversation, say, well, you know, we don't actually provide anything at that level, and you can explain why that is, and then maybe help them move on to somebody else that can help them. Or there's the other alternative, of course, is say, well, you know, what we can do for $50,000 is X, Y, and Z, but we can't do A, B, and C, which we've also identified you probably should be doing.
Right. I mean, at Sandler, we hate discounting because it's a two-headed problem. One, it offends your prospects. If you think about it, if you told them it was $100,000 5 minutes ago and now you're willing to do it for $50,000,
yeah,
you were just trying to rip them off 5 minutes ago, right? But also, if you had that much profit margin and or your costs are $48,000 and you just lowered it from $100 to $50 and now you're making $2,000 instead of $52,000, you're ruining your business. You can't sustain that, and you can't grow your business and invest in giving them the best possible service. I think especially for freelancers and small business, that comes up so much that we're like, we want that business so much that we discount it. But then we can't deliver it appropriately, and we can't give them that extra value and that special sauce that makes us worth referring because we discounted our price. Where if we had held firm, we could give them the works. We could do our very best work and feel proud of it if we got our price.
Yeah, and my experience also in that, and I mean, I've made this mistake in the past of taking people on board that couldn't really pay the price that, as you say, for me would have been sustainable in the longer term for the business. And so in doing the work for them, I started to become a bit resentful inside, you know, and it wasn't fun to do that work. And the other side of it, of course, was they tended to be the more demanding clients. So they would come back and say, no, we need you to change that again. And no, I want it changed again, rather than, you know, you understanding their needs, and then you deliver something really good and they say, that's great, which takes a lot less time, actually.
Exactly. I mean, I've run into that so much in my career as like a freelance graphic designer and web designer, or even as an entertainer. When I take that event that they say, oh, it's a charity and we don't have any money, and, you know, will you please DJ this event? Whatever it happens to be, that's always the way it seemed to work out for me. And like I said earlier, selling stuff, getting your price, and working with clients who love what you do is not cheating. That's really the way to run a profitable business and love what you do for a living, is to work with people who appreciate it, see your value, and will not be discounting all your stuff all the time.
Yeah. And for me, you know, my own personal values, and I'm sure this is common to most entrepreneurs and people that run their own businesses, is, you know, getting a buzz out of the service or product you've provided to your clients, and getting a buzz out of what difference that's made to their business, their life, and to them personally. And in having that, that's kind of an additional reward on top of the sales. But you can't forget that you still need to make a sale, make money, be profitable as a business, because that's your responsibility to those clients as well.
But that's where that buzz comes from. I love that you just said that, because to me, you know, you can call it lots of different things. I kind of call it that special sauce or that magic, but that buzz that's created is created because they appreciate the value, because they spent more money than they would have somewhere else, right? It's been proven, especially in food and wine, that if you do a blind taste test, people can't tell the difference between 100 bottle of wine and a box of wine. They actually prefer the box of wine. But when you tell them what it costs and they spend $100, they actually appreciate the $100 bottle of wine more than they appreciate the boxed wine for 10 bucks. The same thing has been proven in blind studies with wedding cakes and all kinds of stuff, that when you spend more, you actually get more out of it. You spend more on that front row ticket to a concert, you enjoy it more than if you had gotten the ticket for free. It's amazing. But also the same thing, like you said, when you're delivering it, being excited about and passionate about delivering your product or service and having the room and profit margins to give them that special sauce, to go that extra mile and really wow them, is what grows your business. None of us look back on our purchases in our life and say, man, I'm so glad I bought the cheapest toilet paper possible, right? Or the cheapest car I could find. No, we want that expensive car, that valuable car, that double ply quilted toilet paper that's worth the extra money, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because we're worth it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So one of the thoughts I had as we were talking about, you know, the three things that you brought up in where people often, you know, have limiting beliefs around sales. When running a work, and you outlined the process of qualify first, ask a lot of questions, then, you know, then do the close at the point where, you know, they're They're the decision makers. They've got the money and you've got the solution to their needs, then make the close. Now, in terms of, let's say a workshop, because I'm running a workshop later today, where, you know, the typical structure is you present stuff, here's how to do this, and at the end you say, oh, I've got a special offer now, here's, mm-hmm. here's the offer. Is there a better way to do sales in a workshop than that?
That's a great question. I think it works both ways. What I like doing, though, is being very upfront at the beginning of what to expect. I think we all hate it when we sign up for a workshop or a webinar and we think it's going to be educational and valuable, and then we realize we signed up for a timeshare seminar and they're talking about themselves and they give 5 minutes of content and 55 minutes of sales pitch. When I do webinars, podcasts, workshops, or free, you know, talks and briefings for people, I like to be really upfront that I'm going to give you a ton of value. I'm actually going to give you the stuff. But David Sandler, our founder 50 years ago, he actually wrote one of the best-selling sales books of all time called You Can't Teach a Kid to Ride a Bike at a Seminar. And I love that because you can't teach podcasting, Jürgen, in 30 minutes and have people go, oh, I'm magically fixed. I'm going to be a brilliant podcaster like Mark Maron or Tim Ferriss or Seth Godin for the rest of my life because I listened to Jürgen for 30 minutes. So I think it's okay to be upfront and say that and say, I'm going to give you as much value as I possibly can in the next 30 minutes. But chances are you're either not going to want to do this yourself. You're going to have questions and not going to be able to do this yourself. Or, this is just something that you want somebody else to do. This isn't even your initiative. You want help. It's better for you to pay somebody else to do this than to do it yourself, which I think a lot of people miss in their value calculations. I'm blessed to make a pretty good hourly rate. So anything that is really under like $50 an hour, it's better for me to pay somebody else to do than to do it myself, especially as a business owner. If you're a business owner making over $100,000 a year, you should be outsourcing everything you can that's under $50 an hour because you're making money on that. So whether that's yard work at home or, you know, podcasting editing to Jürgen or anything, even your sales training, right? If you're spending a lot of time trying to teach your young salespeople how to sell, you might as well hire Sandler Training and go on your business to build your business to greater levels than spend your time on these lower valuable tasks. So I think that's a long way to say, I like to say all of that up front and be brutally honest with people at the very start. Say, hey, I do have a special offer for you at the end. Here's what it is. It's okay to say no. It's okay to leave the webinar if this isn't for you. And it's okay to say yes, and I'm not going to like put you to the screws and hold you down until you say yes to this webinar. I'm going to help you as much as I can, but this is the brutal truth. A lot of people appreciate our services and want the help from us.
Yeah, that's a really good way to approach it. And I like what you said earlier that you know, a lot of people miss that. And time, for me, you know, I've come to this realization, and maybe it's a consequence of getting older, but time is really precious. That's something that we can't renew. The minute that's just gone is never going to come back. It's lost. So that minute, you know, I want to really be spending that the best way I possibly can. And if I'm earning, you know, $200 or $300 an hour at whatever it is I'm doing, running my business, then things that I can get somebody else to do for $50 an hour, that should be a no-brainer decision. I shouldn't even be thinking about it, other than perhaps who's the best person.
So let me jump on that as it relates to sales and business development. So I know I'm not talking directly with salespeople here, but think about who you spend your time with and what you're doing in the sales and business development efforts. If somebody leaves your workshop in the first 5 minutes, Jürgen, that was never going to buy from you, is that better or worse? If somebody tells you no on a first call because they're never going to buy from you, do you want to know that in the first 5 minutes or after you've chased them for 5 months and had 57 presentations and proposals and quotes and you've gone back and forth and then you lose the deal? Most people want that business so bad in marketing and in sales that they spend a lot of time and money on people who will never buy from them. But one of the best things we do at Sandler is get you a return on your time as well as your money that you spend with us. Because the moment you fire a client that's not profitable, that you say sounds like it's not a good fit to a prospect who's never going to pay your fee or give you the price and respect you deserve, you have just saved yourself a ton of time and given yourself a lot of happiness. And now you can reinvest that time into somebody who does appreciate your services. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. And I think once people realize that, I mean, when that kind of dawned on me as a, you know, it was almost like an aha moment, and then things started changing quite dramatically. And my decisions also, you know, I would hum and haw about decisions in the past and agonize over things for a long time and procrastinate, you know. These days it's much easier because I can see, you know, that's going to help me and it's going to save me time. Bang, it's done. Or no, that's not going to save me time and it doesn't sort of fit into that category. So then it's a no, and, you know, there's no agonizing over it.
I mean, I love this because I think it's a big paradigm change. Think about everything else in your life. When do you want to know you're watching a terrible movie? In the first 5 minutes or the last 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Right? When do you want to know you're in a bad relationship? On the first date or after 10 years of marriage?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the earlier the better. So, like, rip off those Band-Aids. And in business, just I think there's this myth out there that we always have to be closing, that every client is a good client, that we have to get all of the sales. And that's just not true. And it's not the way really profitable, well-run companies operate. They send away as many people as they, or more people than they allow to come into their organization. It's very interesting.
All right. Well, this is fascinating, Mike. I could go on talking sales and mindset and limiting beliefs around sales for ages, but I'm looking at the time. I think it's a good time to move on to the buzz now. We've touched on a couple of things in this already, but the buzz is our innovation round designed to help our audience, who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field, to give them some tips from your experience. So there's five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
You bet. Sounds great.
Yeah. So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think it is give yourself space and room to do that. What I find is, whether it's a salesperson or an owner, running so hard and working in their business that they forget to call a timeout and work on their business. I don't know about you, but my best ideas happen when I work really hard. I learn a whole bunch. I read a whole bunch. I listen to podcasts. And then I let it go. I step back and go for a walk, or you're in the shower, or you're dozing off to sleep. And then you go, that's it. It's when you give yourself that space to think and create and do something better. That's when the innovation happens for me, not when I'm pushing really hard and I'm driving and I'm so focused on doing it the way I've always done that I don't have the peripheral vision to look and look for other directions.
Yeah, that's great advice. To me, I think there's absolute magic in doing that. I get a lot of ideas when I'm out riding my bike, if I'm on my own in particular, where I'm just kind of the mind's focused on my surroundings, my environment, paying attention to the road. You know, we're lucky here with quiet country roads, so you know, you don't have to pay that much attention to traffic, and it's much more about nature and being out there. And often I come back from an hour's ride with five ideas in my head, and I'm sort of after about the third idea, I need to start reciting them so I can remember them, because I don't want to stop to.
I stop my run and walk and enter it in Evernote on my phone, or I keep it next to my bed. So I like wake up, just jot myself, send myself an email or create an Evernote when I have those ideas in space. Yeah.
I need to figure out a way to do an audio recording while I'm still riding the bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I think it also has to do with failure, trying a whole lot of stuff. Nobody comes up with their brilliant, innovative idea on the first try. You've probably heard it a bunch on this podcast, but think about all the stuff that's created on accident, from Febreze to penicillin to all kinds of stuff that, for me, my best ideas come when I'm just trying new things, crazy ideas. Let's put something out there in the world and see what happens and try something off the wall. I like to have fun and do weird things. So usually it happens around how can we make this more fun or exciting and create a buzz versus just delivering the results as expected.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. And I think you need to learn to be comfortable with failure around that as well, but getting out there and trying things. And I like what you said about the accidental discoveries. I'm just looking around on my desk here and I'm surrounded by post-it notes. That must be one of the most brilliant accidental discoveries ever, that adhesive.
Yeah, and they were trying to make something that actually stuck permanently, right?
Yeah,
and
that's
they
right.
ended up
yeah.
with a weak thing that
yeah,
fell
yeah.
off. I love that. And there's so many like that. And I even love the quote. I think it was Michael Jordan said he missed way more shots in his career and failed more times than he won. But people don't remember those. You know, Thomas Edison failed at making the light bulb hundreds of times. All kinds of stories where people just fail and fail and fail over and over again. And as long as you don't quit, you're just finding out new ways to make it work. And you learn so much that that's where the innovation comes from. Because you're like, okay, that doesn't work, but this kind of worked over here and this kind of worked over there. If I combine the two, I'll have something that is really good.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I think Michael Jordan also said that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yeah, maybe that was Wayne Gretzky, but they all get quoted for those.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just give it to Einstein.
Yeah, default. Okay, well, now you mentioned Evernote a moment ago. Do you have a favorite resource that you use a lot?
Oh, wow. I definitely use Evernote a lot. I also use podcasts a lot because of the downtime. I love to fill downtime with learning or something productive. So I have the Podcast Addict app, but any podcast app would be one of my favorites. Evernote is definitely my favorite tool for note taking. I wrote my book, LinkedIn the Sandler Way, exclusively on Evernote. I did the outline, I collected all my notes into chapters for the category, and when I went to write, I would just pull up a note or I'd do a quick search and find the thing that I was looking for and plug it in. And after about, I'd say 6 to 9 months of reading every social selling book I could find and making notes on my favorite parts, writing the book only took me a few weeks. It was amazing.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
Reminded me of one of my favorite jokes, which is how often should you tell your wife that you love her before somebody else does? And the same thing applies to clients. How often should you tell clients that you like them, appreciate them, or do a check-in with them and see how things are going? The correct answer is before somebody else does, almost all the time. So it goes back to what I said earlier of if you're going to fight up front. Talk about everything. Get it out there in the open. If you have a biggest fear, tell them what it is. I'm afraid I'm not going to deliver on time. I'm afraid you're not going to appreciate this extra work that we have to go to deliver it. I'm afraid that you're going to look at these other vendors and get distracted by shiny objects and forget how much we do behind the scenes to really deliver value and where the meat of stuff is. There's all kinds of stuff that you can talk about, but I think it's being proactive instead of reactive that makes the difference there.
That's really good advice. And I love the idea of sharing concerns. So it's really a high level of transparency in that, isn't there, which I think is much appreciated. I mean, one of my clients was telling me yesterday about getting an invoice from their printer supplier. And on the invoice, they said, our charge has gone up by 200%. And here's the new charge that applies as of today.
Yeah.
And there was no communication before that. which, you know, to me, it's just really
it's
bad.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It happens so much, and it could be change in functionality or anything. Just the lack of communication is so terrible. At Sandler, we love talking about that open and honest communication and dealing with those bombs before they explode, right? The best way to get rid of a bomb is to defuse it before it blows up. That's a Sandler rule. And so there is so many things like that. But we teach even prospecting your own clients. You should be calling them as much as you're calling for new business, because it's way more profitable to keep a client than it is to go find a new one. But also just to solve problems and find new opportunities and find ways to better serve them. I can't stress that enough. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah, well, that's one of my favorite ones, actually. The you know, taking care of your existing clients. And there's so many bad examples of that, with particularly the internet service providers, the phone companies.
Yeah.
Who else does it? You know, they're always putting out special offers for new clients signing up.
It's that discounting thing again. I'm telling you, it's horrible. Yeah.
And if you, as an existing subscriber, call them up and say, I'd like to switch to that new discounted plan for your new customers. Well, no, that's only for new customers, you know. So we're not looking after you.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. I don't even know how companies get away with it, to be honest with you, because it really just makes you feel used and devalued.
Yeah, that's right. All right. And the fifth one is, and we've touched on this early on in the conversation, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, I think I would just go back to being yourself and understanding what your value is. Your value is in being different and not being like everybody else. There's this strong drive that, oh, our competitor has this feature, we have to build this feature in, or they're priced at this point, so we have to be close to that. There's no rules like that exist. People keep making that up, but it's not true. So I think the best way to differentiate yourself is to be completely different and to be who you are. We have another Sandler rule that says, if the competition does it, stop doing it right away. So if they come out with a feature that you've had, stop offering that feature. It's not worth it. Think about it. If you're all selling the exact same thing, let's go back to our toilet paper. If we all have quilted two-ply toilet paper, what's the decision going to come down to? It's the lowest price,
yeah.
Right? That's it. So the best way to get more profit, more sales, more referrals, you know, better clients, all of that stuff is by being different. Just stop doing it. Stop chasing your competitors. Certainly don't be a follower. Be the leader. Make them keep trying to catch up with you and match what you're doing, and just put blinders on to all of the competition.
Yeah. That's really great advice. And there's a lot of people that talk a lot about understanding what the competition does in the marketplace. And as a result, we kind of look at that and say, oh, that's a cool idea. I think I'll do that too. But like you said, that's not leading, that's following. If we take the approach of understanding what your clients actually need and who your client is and who their fit is, because they might not be the ideal client for the competition, and focus more on the clients than on the competition, because the clients pay you the money, not the competition.
Exactly. I love that too. I didn't mention the clients, but you spend all your time working on yourself and your clients and ignore everybody else. If you do that, you'll find success. It's so interesting how we get distracted as human beings by shiny objects and newness, and we have to keep doing this. It's even really hard at Sandler. We've been doing sales training for 50 years, and it's easy to say, I'm the vice president of online learning. It's easy to say, we have to get stuff online, or we have to start doing this, and we became the world's largest sales training company. We're in 31 countries by focusing on really good instructor-led trainers and coaches. Why would we stop doing that? Or why would we distract from that mission? I think you do have to see the global market, and you have to understand those things. And you want to understand what your competition is offering, but that doesn't mean you have to match it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike. This has been really great. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and about Sandler, and also maybe get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared with us today.
You bet. You can find me on LinkedIn, Mike D. Montague there. I think for Sandler, there's two things. I would check out the How to Succeed podcast. You're listening to a podcast right now. So if you just search for Sandler Training or How to Succeed, we've done over 300 episodes helping people succeed at different areas of business and their life. And then if you want to learn more about Sandler, go to sandler.com/sell, S-E-L-L. It stands for the Sandler E-Learning Library. And I've collected all of our podcasts, all of our webinars and workshops that we do publicly, all of our free YouTube videos and course samples, and put it in one place in Sandler Online that me and my team build. And you can get it for free for a year. So you just put in your first name, last name, and email, and you can get free access to all of our educational resources and decide if it's right for you. If it is, we're there to help take you to the next level. If it's not for you and you think everything I said today was crazy, then you can move on and find somebody else just like we've been talking about today.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, that's very generous. Thanks, Mike. And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes. So a couple more questions. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner then who wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
Man, I say if you're going to be good at it. Spend all of the time investing in your product or services and making it as good as humanly possible, and take the space to do that. That takes time. It takes effort and dedication to be a specialist and be the best of your craft. If you're going to do something, be good at it. Don't just throw a lot of stuff out there and hope something sticks. And there's a value to a minimum viable product, you know, and getting something out there and testing if it works. But as soon as you find what your core value is, go all in on that. Go 100%.
Yeah. All right. That's great. Love it. Now, finally, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Ah, great question. Seth Godin. Have you asked him yet?
I haven't asked him yet. No.
I cannot get enough of the guy. I haven't had the guts to ask him on my podcast yet either, but I know he's done that for people in his courses, and he's always a great interview.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we'll reach out to Seth and see whether we can get him. I know he's a busy man and hard to find time with him, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, certainly an innovator and certainly a deep thinker. He's thought way more about way more things than I've even tried to consider.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Mike, for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this, digging deeper into sales and particularly into some of the limiting beliefs and mindset barriers that we put in our own way for sales. And I think, you know, what you've shared with us today and the structures and the approaches you've given us are really valuable. So thanks for that. And I wish you all the best and for the future. And let's keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We should also mention that I had you on the How to Succeed podcast. So we don't know when these are going to release and what the airing of those are. But, you know, certainly by 2020 or something, you could search either one and find Jurgen on the How to Succeed podcast. I appreciate you coming on and doing that for me and having me here today. It was great.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun too. So thanks, Mike. Well, wasn't that a highly engaging and informative conversation with Mike? I really hope you enjoyed it and took something away from this episode. He shared some wonderful tips about when is the best time to qualify a lead, and it might not be when you think, and also the three-step Sandler sales process. I'd love to know what you took away from Mike's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Mike Montague. That is MikeMontague. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Mike Montague. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Mike there, as well as links to the Sandler website, to Mike's LinkedIn page, to the How to Succeed podcast, to the book LinkedIn The Sandler Way, and the other resources we spoke about in this conversation. Mike suggested that we have a conversation with Seth Godin on a future Innova Buzz podcast. Now, I've been looking forward to saying this for ages, so here goes. Seth, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Mike Montague. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. It's my thank you for you listening to this podcast. Working through that, you'll gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an enduring, engaging relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery or our help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call to explore that further. Tune in again next week. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up. I'm always amazed how many amazing guests come on to the show every week and share their insights so generously with us. Next week, we have Steph Clark, host of Steph's Business Bookshelf podcast, and Jason Resnick of Res.com. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the Innova Buzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.